Was it eti, kus in yo hatta wasak, lukahadi ayahat, kagwantari, ye pitak. Good morning. My name is Jacqueline Johnson Peta, and I'm a Tlingit from Alaska, and I'm the executive director of the National Congress of American Indians, the oldest and largest Indian organization in the United States. Welcome, distinguished guests here in Washington, D.C., and those listening and watching across the country to the 2010 State of Indian Nations Address. I would like to thank Native Voice One and Native American Calling, as well as the many tribal and public radio stations across the country for airing today's address. With us today are some distinguished and honored guests. Please allow me to introduce some of them. We have our Vice President, Juana Maho Dixon, from the Pama Band of Mission Indians. We have Ron Allen from Jamestown Sklallam, the chairman of Jamestown Sklallam. Bill Martin, the president of my tribe, Central Council of Tlingit Indians. Matthew Wassa from the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians. Don Arnold on our board also from the Scotts Valley Band of Pomo Indians. Irene Kutch with the Ute Indian Tribe. Archie Lynch from the Holloway Saponi Tribe. Karakawan Watts, councilwoman on the Cherokee Nation. We have a former chairman, Lance Gumps, who also serves on our board from the Shinnecock Indian Nation. We have Larry Townsend from the Lumbee Nation here with us today. Bill Kikaba from the Kaw Tribe. David Gipp, who also sits on our board with the rest of the ones that I was listening, from the Standing Rock Reservation. We have Phil Chimburas from the Ute Indian Tribe. And we have Councilman Eugene Whiteberg from Leech Lake. In addition, we have, and very honored to be able to have, the Assistant Secretary for the Department of Interior, for Indian Affairs at Department of Interior, Larry Echohawk, and his team that's with him. We have the Executive Director of NIGA, Mark Van Norman, Pete Homer, the Director of the Native Business Association, Ron Lassard from the Corporate for National Community Service, Floyd Pitts and Anna Lobas from Red Cross, and Bambi Krause from the Native American Tribal Historic Preservation Office. And I'm sure there are many others in the audience that I didn't catch, but I just wanted to give you a flavor of some of the people who have joined us here today for this moment to be able to hear President Jefferson Keel give his first State of the Indian Address. So with that, I would like to introduce, it is my pleasure to introduce the President of the National Congress of American Indians, President Jefferson Keel. President Keel is currently elected to his third term as Lieutenant Governor for the Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma, and he's previously served two other terms for NCAI as the first Vice President. President Keel is firmly committed to the service of Indian country and actively supports self-reliance for his people. President Keel believes in the policy of helping our people through the honored public service, and he himself is serving as a retired U.S. Army officer and had 20 years of active duty service. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me introduce the President of the National Congress of American Indians, Jefferson Keel.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Chukma. Chukma skir slaka. I'm honored to be here this morning to give my first State of the Indian Nations address. Indian people, tribal leaders, members of the administration, members of the 111th Congress, congressional staff, Indian organizations, friends, family, and all of those watching or listening across the country. Today, Indian nations are proud of the growing recognition we have long sought, recognition of the nation-to-nation relationship between Indian tribes and the United States. We are partners and fellow citizens, and our bond endures. Our bond is demonstrated in the history and our culture, and is shown by the large number of American natives who serve in the United States military. Indian nations are proud to contribute to the strength and diversity of America. In that spirit, I'm pleased to report that the state of Indian nation are strong, and we're growing stronger every day. At the same time, we have much work to do, and now is the time to take action. Our great hope is that next year will be like this past year, one of achievement and the culmination of much work that has extended over years and in some cases decades. Indian nations are sovereign nations and always have been. However, in our recent history, it's only been since the 1970s that the federal government has come to recognize sovereignty in a meaningful way. Many tribes, though, still seek federal recognition. A fair and timely process for consideration of that recognition is critical today. Federal policy of tribal self-determination has unleashed the creative energies of our people, and today more and more tribes are full-service governments taking responsibility for education, health, police, courts, the vitality of their natural resources, and fostering an environment for economic development. But now we need to take the next steps toward the evolution of tribal self-government, particularly in land management, job creation, law enforcement, taxation, and revamping our programs and services to create a healthy environment for our children. These services, these changes, will be of historic proportions, especially for how we govern, how we sustain our culture, and most importantly, how we as Indians live our daily lives. Sovereignty is our right, but it's also our responsibility. Our entire nation will benefit from long-awaited steps that will bolster the ability of Indian nations to more fully administer our governments, build up our communities, and meet the essential social and economic needs of our people. So today, I want to share with you three things. First, the nature and value of sovereignty. Second, a brief inventory of the significant challenges we face. And third, what some of the solutions are, working in a partnership on a nation-to-nation basis with the federal government. First, on sovereignty. Let there be no confusion about the relationship between Indian nations and the United States. Indian nations are sovereign nations with formal governments and have been for thousands of years. This inherent sovereignty is recognized in Article 1 of the Constitution. The Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states, and with Indian tribes. Over 200 years of Supreme Court decisions have consistently held that Indian tribes retain the inherent sovereignty to govern our people and our lands. But sovereignty is a $5 word for ordinary, everyday facts. Just like every other government, Indian tribes have the authority to make and enforce their own laws, and enforce them for the safety and welfare of their communities. In addition, tribal governments are dedicated to protecting our unique Indian cultures and our ways of life. Just as states and foreign countries have a unique relationship with Washington, so do tribal nations. The fundamental bond is the same. Tribal governments represent and are accountable to the citizens who elect them. Sovereignty has practical and tangible benefits for Indians and for the United States as a whole. It is the self-determined path to economic growth and to addressing chronic unemployment, education, crime, and so many of the problems our citizens face in their daily lives. It contributes to the cultural diversity of the United States and promotes voices, that perspectives that help us to solve many of the nation's challenges. I'm pleased to report that the administration and Congress have taken important steps to recognize our sovereignty and the proper authority of our governments. As they say in Washington, we are taking our rightful place at the table. And we're seeing progress. Last December, a proposed settlement of the Cobell versus Salazar suit was finally made to remedy the federal government's failure to account for Indian trust funds. In November, the National Congress of American Indians opened our Embassy of Tribal Nations. For the first time since settlement, our nations have a permanent home in Washington, D.C., where we can more effectively assert our sovereign status and facilitate a much stronger nation-to-nation relationship with the federal government. This historic opening coincided with the first annual White House Tribal Nations Conference. It is an understatement to say that this was a historic day for Indian Country. I want to again thank President Barack Obama for living up to his campaign promises to hold this meeting, and I thank the members of the administration for their commitment to addressing our most pressing issues. At that meeting, we saw the first of many action steps that need to be taken. President Obama's directive to every cabinet agency to provide him with a detailed plan to improve tribal consultation. Since that meeting, we've been working with federal agencies to strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship because we understand that sovereignty is not a one-way street. We come as participants and fellow players in American civic life. Indian nations have a record of achievement. For example, in spite of severe disparities in funding for Indian health programs, tribes have developed pioneering practices for telemedicine and for the treatment of diabetes, and have created a groundbreaking program to deliver dental care to remote areas, a program that could serve as a model for the rest of the country. Though because of our distinct and spiritual relationships with our land, Indian peoples are disproportionately impacted by climate change and environmental degradation. We're innovators in the field of natural resource management, and we offer our traditional knowledge to the toolbox of solutions to climate change. Our environmental stewardship has led to achievements such as the Red Lake walleye recovery, the largest freshwater fish species recovery in modern-day America. When Indian nations and Washington engage in true partnership, we succeed. Under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, Indian nations have delivered health care on the edge of the Arctic Circle, expanded the Nisqually fishing economy in the Puget Sound through diving and technology, created as many as 300 jobs on the Colville Reservation by restoring the transportation infrastructure for timber, and much more. The Recovery Act is a good example of Congress's partnership with Indian tribes. Through early engagement, tribes were able to recommend provisions that would yield the highest job creation and infrastructure building opportunities for our communities. These solutions were seriously taken up by Congress, and tribes received more than $3 billion in direct funding, as well as new opportunities for economic development financing. NCAI is producing a report with case studies and analysis of job creation and other economic benefits that federal investments have brought to our communities. The bottom line is that when tribes govern themselves in much the same way as states and communities do, the benefits accrue not only to Indian Country, but to all Americans. Indian Country was also included from the beginning in drafting national health care reform legislation to ensure that whatever reforms are passed will enhance and protect our Indian health care system. Congressional leadership has recognized that when national policies with significant impact on tribes are considered, Indian Country must be at the table. We are welcome. Thank you. Thank you. We're welcomed into the policymaking process early, and it makes a big difference. We're able to propose solutions that work best for the unique circumstances of Indian Country, rather than trying to adapt policies that did not take our needs into consideration and never worked. We wholeheartedly thank the leadership for working with Indian Country to develop policies that strengthen tribal communities and our ability to contribute to the economy and vitality of America. The FY 2011 Indian Country budget request that we are releasing today provides an agenda for additional work that we can partner together to achieve. Through this great change and the resulting progress, we will direct new strength toward the chronic problems our people face. I want to bring your attention to one of the most egregious and underreported crises in Indian Country. Day after day, we hear about America's unemployment crisis, particularly after the jobless rate has skyrocketed above 10%. I agree. It is a crisis. I know that because on Indian reservations and in Alaska Native villages, unemployment is above 50%. And that's not just due to this recession. The Indian unemployment rate on reservations has been at or above 50% for decades. In some parts of Indian country, it's even worse. In 2005, when the national unemployment rate was only 5%, the Bureau of Indian Affairs reported reservation unemployment in the states of Arizona, Utah, and Nevada at 63%. In the Northern Rockies, 67%. In the Northern Plains, 77%. Put simply, unemployment is an economic crisis that has afflicted our communities for generations. For most Americans, going up to 10% unemployment has become a crisis of historic proportions. For Indians, coming down to 10% would be a recovery of historic proportions. Imagine men and women who have tried and failed to find work year after year. Imagine wanting something better for your children, knowing that the dropout rate for high school is higher among Native communities than any other minority group in the country. Imagine that the place you live has the lowest college graduation rate in the United States. What encouragement does a child have to study and prepare for meaningful work when their parents can't find a job for years? Wouldn't your hope run out? That's what 50% unemployment rate means in Indian country. The effect is like dominoes falling. Indian country suffers from higher rates of substance abuse, domestic violence, suicide, and teen births than the rest of the country. A higher rate of mental health issues, a greater concentration of conditions such as diabetes and obesity. Our incarceration rates are well above the national average. Our needs are just like yours. We want a normal daily life and with meaningful opportunities. Yet for decades, tribal peoples have been denied these opportunities. They experience daily circumstances that most Americans would never tolerate. The jobs bill is an important vehicle to address the severe and immediate unemployment problem in Indian country. We applaud the efforts of congressional leadership in carefully considering the needs of Indian country and solutions with the greatest impact on our communities. Our people are suffering, but our spirit is not broken. We've endured centuries. Thank you. We've endured centuries of neglect and abuse, yet we remain steadfast in our journey toward self-reliance. Sovereignty is the path to solutions, sovereignty matched by the resources we need. We are very appreciative that we have a place at the table with this administration, and we intend to use it to create jobs and improve the quality of life for our people. Respect for sovereignty leads to cooperation, which is what we all seek in this growing government-to-government relationship. But tribes have been around for a long time, and we've heard a lot of promises, and we've been to a lot of meetings. Now is the time to convert good intentions into immediate actions. In this spirit, thank you. There are seven things that could be accomplished for Indian nations right now. They're not everything, but they're a good start. These actions will create jobs, expand health care, improve education, address crime, and more. All it requires is action by the administration, and I call on the administration to act on these matters in the next 12 months. First, take action to restore tribal lands and allow us to use our lands as we see fit. The vast majority of Indian reservations are heavily affected by land loss, and the most significant obstacle that Indian tribes face in restoring and consolidating their lands is simply inaction and delay at the Department of the Interior. Many tribes have had land to trust applications pending for over a decade, and the vast majority are on reservation and are not controversial in any way. Restoration of the tribal land base is critical to build economic development. But even the lands we have are often underutilized. Their development is often undermined by excessive bureaucratic hurdles. Tribal lands contain over 10% of the nation's traditional and clean energy resources. The wind potential on the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana is estimated to be up to 54 million megawatt hours per year. That's enough energy if fully developed and supported by adequate transmission and other infrastructure to heat and light up to 5 million homes. Indian tribes have nearly a quarter of American onshore oil and gas reserves and one-third of America's low-sulfur coal. Yet production from tribal lands represents less than 5% of current onshore oil, gas, and coal production. Why is this? When tribes want to do something with their land, especially economic development, we have to go through as many as 7 times the number of federal approval processes as similar lands outside reservation boundaries. Approvals on tribal lands drag on literally for years, placing tribal economic initiatives at severe, if not fatal, competitive disadvantages. No one can run a business that way. The administration could fix that by reforming the federal trust system for land at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This would streamline a path to jobs, new business, and economic growth. Second, to address... Thank you. Second is to address law enforcement. There's already some movement on this with Attorney General Holder's recent announcement of reforms. But that's not everything. The Interior Department needs to address its policing role in Indian country, especially given the disproportionately high rates of drug trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual assault that occur on Indian lands. Our reservations have become a target and a haven for drug trafficking. The problem is a failure of coordination and a lack of funding. The administration has the power to fix both of those. Third is guarantee equal treatment under the law by granting tribal governments the same treatment as state and local governments on tax and finance matters. Compared to tribal governments, state and local governments get preferential treatment on tax-exempt bonds, pension plans, benefits, and other financial instruments. Indian nations deserve the same financial advantages. We need this so tribal governments can attract businesses and create jobs, which is what governments are supposed to do. Fourth is an investment in our children so that they may grow into healthy youth and become the next generation of tribal leaders, community members, and business leaders. Our youth are a valuable resource. However, too often the investment made in Indian youth is at the back end when intervention services are needed. They address only the symptoms of poverty and lack of opportunity and fail to harness the inherent potential of our children and teenagers. Young people have a capacity for creating and leading positive community change. We need support for a youth-led wellness initiative that addresses their needs for safety, education, health care, and job skill development with coordination across the systems and departments through which these services are delivered. Fifth is to ensure effective distribution of funds to tribal governments. At a moment where the administration and Congress have raised collaboration with tribal governments to a historic and promising new level, now is not the time to shrink back from investments that can transform our communities. Indian nations have the primary role in administering health care, education, law enforcement, transportation, and many other services for our citizens. Making the promise of government-to-government a reality will require ongoing funding for tribal governments, as well as actions by the administration to both minimize the administrative burden and maximize tribal ability to compete in discretionary programs. Specific solutions could include exempting funding for tribal governmental services from discretionary spending freezes and rescissions, and eliminating match requirements, dedicating set-aside funding for specifically tribal support government programs, and ensuring selection criteria and performance measures are appropriate for tribal governments. We applaud the administration's acknowledgement that effective investments like the Recovery Act must be measured with reliable data. Tribal leaders are eager to see the federal government support more robust data collection. A timely example is the need for the Department of Labor and Census Bureau to collect more accurate and timely Native unemployment data so we can better understand the impact of the crisis and recovery. Sixth is interagency coordination to improve tribal infrastructure. Many Americans take their infrastructure, such as roads, schools, water, telecommunications, for granted. But it's an ongoing struggle in Indian country. For example, 12% of tribal homes lack access to safe drinking water or basic sanitation, compared to less than 1% nationwide. We can plan and administer as tribal governments, but we need a federal commitment across common programs to work on an interagency basis and collaborate with tribes, as being demonstrated by the Interagency Task Force on Water Infrastructure. Such efforts have already proven effective. For example, Public Law 102-477 created a program that allows tribes to combine funds for up to 12 related employment and training programs within three federal agencies. It yields tangible results in streamlining programs, reduces administrative burdens, and increases the efficient use of funds for dramatically underfunded programs. Time and money are focused on implementing solutions. Finally, we need the administration to support a legislative fix for last year's Carcheri decision by the Supreme Court. This touches on a lot of issues, but especially the ability of tribal governments to carry out land development. We need clear and fair rules on our legal status and our ability to pursue contracts and loans so we can carry out economic development. These seven actions will have a real and immediate effect on improving life in Indian communities. At this time next year, I hope to report on seven clear successes. I'll close with three points. First, to be sovereign is to exercise the right to govern and to protect the health, safety, and welfare of tribal citizens. We seek a growing government-to-government relationship with Washington. We come as participants, contributors, and fellow players, and we aim to be competitors and leaders. Sovereignty is indeed a net plus for America. Second, self-determination is the path to economic revitalization and cultural diversity to overcome employment, declining education, crime, and other challenges. Finally, we ask the administration to address seven clear and important matters as a way to further strengthen our nation-to-nation relationship and improve life in Indian country. As we continue to exercise our sovereignty, Indian nations will receive the respect we've long deserved, and we can further engage in government-to-government relationship that will transform lives in Indian communities. That is our most basic goal, and it will benefit Native people and all Americans for generations to come. Thank you, Chikmashki.
President Keel. At this point, we're open for any questions. So if anybody has any questions, we'd be glad to entertain them. If you could please say your name and who you represent, we'd appreciate that.
John Danner, Choctaw, Oklahoma. And I wanted to check. Our research shows that tribes could be generating $100 to $500 billion in energy, and that the new long lines with the smart grid would make remote areas a way to be able to power urban areas, and that indeed that makes the missing link on the economics for green and energy that Obama is looking for. Those same areas to clear those lines could also be used for telecommunications, which would then set us up in terms of being able to be the new landowners. Where do we stand, and what can we do to accomplish that?
Okay. That is, thank you for that question. You know, there are many tribes that already are engaged in energy development. Many tribes have their own tribal utility authorities that are working in conjunction with the federal government in many ways to improve that coordination. But I think the energy bill will clarify a lot of that. I'm going to ask Jackie to comment on specifics of that bill.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for being here today. As you know, energy is really an important new economic opportunity in Indian country. We've been working currently with the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs and Senator Dorgan's staff to put together an energy bill proposal that is yet to be introduced. But in that energy bill proposal, we're dealing with not only access to the transmission lines, but also dealing with the economic and financial tools that we need to be able to create the kind of incentives that make energy development feasible in Indian country. And so we are looking very forward to this bill being introduced early in this session, and we're looking hard and strong for good bipartisan support.
Ron Ellen, Chair for Jamestown Squam Tribe in Washington State. What is NCAI advocating with the Department of Justice to advance the public safety interests of our communities?
Thank you, Chairman Allen. You know, on a number of fronts, we've been working with Department of Justice. Department of Justice has really stepped up to be a player. Several years ago, we had reports that came to Congress around the numbers, the amnesty report that came about, the extreme numbers of women against violence, and we've got a great coalition, which Juana Maho is the co-chair of, for addressing the women against violence issues in Indian country. But it's not just about that. It's also like what President Keel talked about in the speech about the gang and the gang violence that is affecting our communities and the drug dealers that have come because of the fact that we don't have as many law enforcement officers as we have. In the way that Indian public safety is delivered in Indian country, we rely upon a good cooperative relationship between the Department of Interior and Department of Justice, and we need both of them stepping to the table and collaborating together. The administration has announced that there is more Indian police officers and police officers going to Indian country. They have plans for putting together the training that's needed around sexual violence, drug enforcement, and those will be good steps. But also what we need from Department of Justice, and I think that under the current leadership of Department of Justice, they're looking for how do they streamline their process for grant making for tribes so that we could build up the detention centers that we need in our communities, the holding places, the prevention tools and resources, but also the needed money to address strengthening our tribal court system. We are looking for Congress's support to help Department of Justice and Department of Interior in their work by passing the Tribal Law and Order Act, a bill that is pending in both the House and the Senate. It's critical for dealing with the jurisdictional challenges in Indian country, and we look forward to the bipartisan support and getting that bill moving this year, too.
I'm Victor Marino with ResNet. You mentioned, Mr. Keel, some of the successes with the Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Are you basically saying that the stimulus package is truly working for Indian country? And I have a follow-up.
Absolutely. The tribes that were able to access recovery dollars allows tribes to retain those individuals who ordinarily might not have been able to stay employed. So it allows tribes to access funding for those specific purposes, but also to invest in the future. You know, a lot of those dollars have not been they've been allocated, but they've not been spent yet. You know, the tribes are still, they went through a grant process to receive those dollars, and they're just now getting that funding. So it's going to take some time to really look and see what the true measures are in terms of success. But they can't hurt. There's no way that they can be used in a negative way, because they do allow tribes to use them to revitalize their own economies.
If I could just follow up, there's a good example. First, a lot of the recovery dollars were targeted to the huge backlog that was in the agencies of programs, transportation dollars, healthcare facility dollars that were needed in Indian Country. So those were early wins. We've had them on the drawing board for a long time, and so the planning around those was ready to go. But then there was new things in the ARRA funds that was important to Indian Country. For the first time for us to be able to deal with tax-exempt bond financing, those are the kinds of things that will be long-lasting. If we'll be able to make them last, if we'll be able to have access to tax-exempt bond funding beyond just ARRA funds. And you had a follow-up question.
In fact, to that point, when things began, of course, Indian Country was way over here, so that no matter how much money you got, the sizable amount, you still have an incredible backlog and catching up to do. The president has just said that there's going to be a reduction in cuts in discretionary spending beyond defense and other entities. Are you concerned that since the other shoe is the budget and other monies, that funding will be cut and therefore could further penalize Indian Country when it comes to those?
Absolutely, we're concerned. Anytime the mention of freezes or, you know, rescissions are mentioned, that always represents a fear in Indian Country, because we've never been funded at an adequate level. You know, Indian Country has never received adequate funding for its programs through any administration. So when there's a freeze, automatically it does raise our alarms. However, we don't know what those are until the budget is released, and that won't be until Monday. We don't know what those will represent. We do look forward to working with Congress and working with the other staff and congressional staff and our friends in Congress to make sure that we protect the gains that we've made.
And on that note, if I could just talk a little bit about what Indian Country is looking to in the budget. Indian Country has rallied around a couple of things that are very important for us. First of all, the contract support cost, which is when the tribes provide a service that the federal government was responsible for providing, they should get paid the same as any other contractor for those services. And then our tribal priority allocation, the TPA dollars, which allows to make sure that we have the administrative functions necessary for our tribes. But there were four areas that tribes have really highlighted as priority areas for them, and not in any particular order, but one, of course, is education, health care, natural resources, including economic development, and protection, public safety services. Those are all real priorities for the tribal leaders, and we've been working and urging the administration to help us in those areas. We did get great improvements last year, particularly in law enforcement and health care. We're hoping that we'll be able to sustain that, and we're hoping to be able to work through whatever those freeze requirements may have. But we're also looking, as you know, President Keel mentioned, when the tribes partner with the administration around the programs and the delivery of those programs, the self-reliance of the tribes and the value that the tribes bring to the table actually helps those become more efficient programs. And we think that by partnering together, we can make those dollars be stronger. In your packet, you have a copy of NCAI's budget requests, but also you have some information about how the ARRA dollars were spent. And we believe that we're a good federal investment.
Good morning. Lance Gumbs, former chairman of the Shinnecock Nation in New York. At the beginning of your speech, you brought up the federal recognition process. We are a tribe that has been waiting for 31 years, and we just got our preliminary decision on December 15th, which was a good decision. We're still holding our breath for the final decision, but I'd like to know what NCAI is going to do to move forward in this year to help to fix this broken process, which I think everyone has admitted over the last 31 years is broken. So I'd just like to know what NCAI's position is on that and where we're going to go.
Well, the National Congress of American Indians is an inclusive organization, and it represents Indian people around across the country. Those tribes that are struggling to retain or regain the federal recognition, it is a broken system. It's a system that needs immediate care. The National Congress of American Indians will continue to advocate on behalf of those tribal governments to get a fair and timely review process. The review process is very difficult, and you and I have visited in great detail about that, and so I'm aware of the struggles. But I can tell you that the National Congress of American Indians will continue to advocate on behalf of all Indian people across the country.
Thank you, and thank you for your comments today. They're very, very dear to all of us. My name is Bill Martin. I'm president of Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. And during the stimulus package funding, Alaska tribes missed out a lot simply because of the Alaska Native Corporation structure, where we're landless. And so we missed out on many opportunities because of that, and yet Alaska tribes still have the same needs as the tribes in the lower 48. We also lost out on funding simply because we're landless and we don't have that capacity. And I hope that NCI will work with us, with the Alaska tribes, who are 40% of the tribes in the United States. So we hope that NCI will work with us, and if there's any future stimulus money, to be cognizant of the fact that reservations don't exist in Alaska, and that wording and verbiage to that effect should be not be in stimulus packages. Thank you.
There is money that is available for training young people in communications, especially in journalism. I met with Arne Duncan, and he now holds more money than anybody in the history of the world for education. And the thing is that when I told him about, and asked him what's he doing for Indian education, he almost teared up when he talked about going out to Lame Deer and saying that he was really sad he didn't know how to be able to help. Well, I said there's a lot of ways. NCAI has got a few ideas about that. So the opportunity to be able to place, we can help place young people. And we just had a meeting here at the press club with several of these news reporters. Helen Thomas was there, probably the oldest one sitting on the front. But we need to have a Native American, strong, independent, and being able to ask all the questions, because unasked, they won't not address it. And in front of the world, in front of the press, in front of all the people, our issues need to be brought up. There is money available for it, and if any tribe has young people who want to be able to get into reporting and journalism, then the National Press Club has scholarships, and I would ask that you contact NCAI and give those names, because we have positions that are going unfilled.
Thank you, and I wanted to follow up on education, just as I might. You know, this year, as we've been looking forward to the No Child Left Behind reauthorization for the discussion that we need to have with Indian Country's recommendations. And yesterday, we were lucky enough to be able to have some conversation with some of the staffers from the Hill, and we're looking forward to having a listening session around education to see what we can do to not only address the current conditions of the rehabilitation needs that our schools are desperately in need of, the new schools that are out there, the tribal colleges, of the expansion programs that they need to be able to train our workforce for the future, but also to be able to get Indian Country to really think about our place in the world. As the world market changes, how are we setting up ourselves to be able to be players in a global marketplace? And so we're looking forward to the continued dialogue as we get ready to bring on the discussion around the reauthorization.
I just wanted to ask, it's a twofold question. One is that the sacred sites bill that we worked on years ago needs to come back. And as we pursue a greater relationship with the digital divide and the infrastructure of technology in cyberspace, we become more and more threatened when we experience wildfires and floods, and our sacred sites are exposed. And we need to revisit that in terms of having a partnership. I know that the Corps of Engineers has not been the greatest ally. So I'm asking that, if we can champion, whether it be pulling together people in the field or using our human cultural resource group to lead that, but we need to reconnect those dots of protecting our sites, our religion, and those concerns. But we need to be the leaders, and I'm hoping that you, along with the staff, not that you have too much to do, but that you would consider revisiting this. It's a momentous thing to come back to. Connecting that with cyberspace is trying to get some tribes who aren't having access to that gain access to that.
Thank you, Juana. That's an excellent point. And, you know, our historic and sacred sites are, you're absolutely right, of extreme importance. They're very dear to all tribal people around the country. I know that there's an effort, the National Historic Preservation Officers, NAFPO, and the there are a number of agencies that are working in conjunction that work with tribes to talk about those issues. And there are ongoing efforts across the country to protect those sites. But I know that NCAI is doing some significant work on that. I'm going to ask Jackie to comment on that. So.
Great. Thank you. First of all, I want to recognize Wanda James from USET here, United Southern Eastern Tribes, because they were a leader in helping bring this issue to the table, particularly around cell tower placement. When across the country, corporations were wanting to place their cell towers, and many times very strategically at the highest mountain or in certain places that were very historically significant to Indian country. And through this process of recognizing the value of consultation with tribes and the tribes working with the FCC, we were able to come up with a process that made sense. It was a process that recognized the expeditious manner that the corporations needed to have some solution, but that still respected that the tribes had, you know, significant concerns in certain places, and also that there could be a whole swarm of applications that could come through, and tribes didn't have the capacity or the staffing at home to look through those, you know, all of the reviews that were necessary. So we were able to come up with a process that allowed tribes to determine what places that they were concerned about up front. The corporations could then look at this inventory, send the notices out appropriately, and there were time frames set. That's the kind of process that I think consultation brings to both Indian country and to the public sector that wants to invest in and around Indian country. And it's something that helps us protect our sacred sites, but allows for economic development to still flourish.
Let's ask a second question, if you might. First of all, again, Ron Allen, chairman for Jamestown Squam Tribe in Washington State. And I neglected to compliment Mr. President. Now, that was an outstanding summary of the state of Indian nations across America, and we deeply appreciate that. A second issue, you raised the concern of healthy economies and jobs in Indian country, and they are hinged very closely to financing. What is NCAI advocating with the Department of Treasury or the Federal Reserve with regard to enhancing our economies and creating jobs in our communities?
I think this is one that that we're very excited about having a conversation about. For a long time, we've been advocating for these same economic tools that could be very valuable to us, like tax-exempt bond financing that other governments have access to. Other governments are able to use tax-exempt bond financing to put together economic development, and in a way that tribes are restricted from doing so. So we've been urging conversations not only with Congress, but also with the administration about addressing those. In addition to that, we're asking for things such as we have an employment tax credit, an accelerated depreciation tax credit. Those are two good tools for Indian country, but the problem is, and the challenge is, that they aren't authorized to go beyond a very limited time frame, and so they don't bring any value to the table when we're negotiating business deals or then when we're trying to pencil out what works. So we're asking for, you know, an extension of that time frame to 10 years to be able to make those tools become a real reality for us. But if you look at Indian country and the access to capital has been a challenge for us, we have very, very few financial institutions that are actually located on our reservations or in our communities. Most of the financial institutions are off reservation or outside of our community, and so they're in community investments not the same. So we're looking at, we've been very supportive for a number of years on the CDFI, the Community Development Financial Institutions, because it is a vehicle for us creating financial institutions in our own communities. But it doesn't bring us the kind of capital that we need to be able to get that that small business moving, that entrepreneurial community reveting in our areas. We don't have access to that, you know, up to 50,000 dollars in our communities to be able to do what we need to do to get some of those moving. So we're looking for some expansion. We've asked in the financial reforms bill that we have the Native American Bank. And what we would like to have is the ability of that bank to be able to go to other communities, other tribal communities and reservations without having to go through a state approval process that's limiting when this is a national Indian bank and we worked on our reservations. A slight change to that language would allow us to expand and branch out so we would have Native American bank branches on our tribal reservations, and that's another solution. We have a whole list of solutions, but that just kind of gives you some of the things that we've been looking forward to. Once again, with energy development, another one I want to bring up that's been a real problem for us in development period, whether it be energy development and construction, is surety bonding. It's really difficult for tribes to get the surety bonding that they need because we're a tribal government with a tribal institution, and not everybody quite understands that. You know, there's only a few national surety bonding companies out there, but it's still very difficult for them to understand the structure of a tribal government. We're hoping that we could get a surety bonding guarantee program, similar to what the SBA program has, and the SBA program, we're expanding it so it works better in Indian country. Those are just some of the tools that we're proposing.
And this is concerning the tuition waiver at Fort Lewis College, and what will NCI do to ensure that our Native students can continue to get a free education?
I'm glad you brought that up, the tuition waiver at Fort Lewis College. So I'll give you what I know as the latest information. By the way, my children went to Fort Lewis College, and I'll tell you, that was a great institution because coming from Alaska, we have a lot of our students who make that trail down to Fort Lewis. I think we had a caravan of 13 cars the first year my daughter went there, all driving down together. I was a single adult. But we've reached out to find out more about that information. I understand this is an effort in the state, but I understand that effort has been tabled and it is no longer moving forward, and that there was an apology about the understanding how this would penalize Indian students from attending a land-grant college. And so I think that issue has been resolved.
One of the past secretaries of energy had approached me about the discussion of parking federal money into Indian banks. So each one of those secretaries has millions of dollars that they're putting into minority banks. Native American Bank ought to be one of the first ones. They had millions of dollars. And now with all these billions of dollars of surplus, then that could be an extraordinary amount that could be parked there. And the other part is $35,000 of guaranteed funds or loans are available immediately with SBA. And Joanna Stancil is over at SBA now and be glad to help any of the small businesses like Pete Homer's been doing for years.
I know that we're running out of time. I wanted to make one last comment. It has to do with education of our young people. Our young people today are creative, they're innovative, and they're eager to go to college to become the next generation of leaders for this country. We're excited to see our young people now coming back from law school, from medical school, serving our people. So anything we can do to help in that effort, we certainly want to do that. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening and being part of our annual State of Indian Nations Address. And on behalf of the National Congress of American Indians, we'd like to thank once again Native Voice One, Native American Calling, and all the public and local radio stations, tribal radio stations across the country. If you want, we have many, many viewers that are on ncai.org. This copy of this webcast will be also posted within an hour at our website. Thank you again. For those of you covering this event, Gunashchish.